Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Not Just New Movies podcast, the show where we review a seemingly random film currently not in theaters. My name is Ben Pearson, and today we're going to be talking about Clive Barker's 1987 film Hellraiser. Joining me is my regular co-host, Tyler. How's it going, sir?
Hey, Ben. I think there's actually a film called Hellraiser Inferno.
Okay.
Seems a bit, kind of like doublespeak. We already assume that hell is fairly hot.
Right.
Why do you need to call it Inferno?
There are multiple films in this Hellraiser franchise that I was completely unaware of, but we'll talk about that in just a little bit. So if you guys are joining us for the very first time, we start every episode with the character name game, transition into our media consume section where we talk about what we've been watching, move into our review of the week, and finish with listener voicemails and emails. You can always leave us a voicemail at 904-469-6566 or email us at notjustnewmovies@gmail.com. And you can find this and every other episode of this podcast at notjustnewmovies.com. So, Tyler, I have the character name game for you this week.
We still playing that?
We are. Oh, yeah.
Okay, all right.
We're 90-something episodes strong, still going.
91.
Okay, here we go. The character name game for this week is Stella Bridger. Stella Bridger. So be thinking about that, and you'll come back and try to guess the movie that that character is from a little bit later on in the show. In the meantime, let's jump into the media consume section. This is the part of the show where we talk about what we've been watching, any sort of cool events we've been to, conventions or film festivals or anything along those lines. So, Tyler, what have you been consuming over the past week? Or I guess 2 weeks, maybe, if you want to include the stuff from the week before.
I'm not going to do that.
Okay.
Recently went and saw The Dictator. That's a movie.
Yes, it is.
Rocking in at a svelte hour and 23 minutes.
Nice.
Liked the cameos. I liked the, the jokes were pretty much uncalled for, but I guess that's the kind of movie I was expecting, so nothing wrong there.
Mm-hmm.
I think we got a biologically inaccurate camera view of how a baby is born.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Kind of thought that was odd.
Yeah, I've never seen that before.
It got fairly dark at one point where he was like, I don't know, he was threatening to kill somebody or someone was going to commit suicide. I can't remember. But overall, fairly humorous.
What did you think about Jason Mantzoukas?
Oh, I love him. Yeah, he's in the league. He plays Rafi. Mm-hmm. And he's fairly hilarious. Not as hilarious as he could have been, but still pretty funny.
Speaking of the league, I'm not going to talk about this in my media consume section, but over this past week I did watch the first 4 episodes of season 1. I think it was all the way up to the Mr. McGiblets episode.
Mm-hmm.
That show's pretty funny. I've heard it kind of goes downhill from there, though.
Right? No, it actually gets better. Don't listen to those people.
Oh, okay. All right, well, maybe I'll slowly...
Yeah, just take advice from me.
Okay.
It gets better.
Alright. What else have you been checking out?
First season's a little weak, actually, but I think it's better. Wait till they get to, Dirty Randy and that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Also watched on HBO the Ricky Gervais show.
Mm-hmm.
Also fairly humorous. It's their podcast, but animated.
Mm-hmm.
Take what they say on the podcast and basically make cartoons around it. And it's constantly, switching out. Their voices narrate the stories. And so they'll have, multiple characters. And then the voices from the podcast will, go along with the characters in the animation. So, Gervais could be doing this thing on his own where he's, narrating for 3 different characters. And in the show, it's 3 different characters, which is kind of funny. And then they have this kind of... They call him a nitwit or an idiot or something. He's not really dumb. He's just simple.
Mm-hmm.
And they ask him these really thought-provoking questions, and he always has kind of a simplistic way of looking at it. And Ricky Gervais laughs through most of the show heartily at these guys' answers. And sometimes they'll get really mad at him too, and just call him all sorts of fairly foul names. You know, HBO language providing.
What is that guy's name? Carl Pilkington or something?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay.
And Stephen Merchant.
Nice.
And they just, they just shoot the shit. It's pretty hilarious.
Okay.
It's season 3 right now that I'm watching, so I have to get my hands on 1 and 2 because I didn't think, I was like, this might be kind of funny, but it's actually it's 24 minutes long and I laughed through the entire thing.
Nice.
So.
good to see that you're putting your new HBO subscription to good use.
I am. I am raking the on-demand.
Nice. Cool.
That is it.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. Don't look at me.
So for me, the one thing that I wanted to talk about was Ridley Scott's Alien. I rewatched this movie in preparation for Prometheus, which is the new kind of return to science fiction that Ridley Scott is doing. It comes out on June 8th, which is this Friday by the time listeners are listening to this episode.
Cha-ching. We get money for that, right?
What's that?
We get money for that plug, right?
I don't think so. I wish. Oh, man.
Thanks, Mr. Scott.
This entire podcast would just be me saying release dates for movies if we got money for that.
You'd be surprised how many podcasts do that. It's retarded.
Yeah.
I mean, it's ridiculous. I shouldn't say that word. Sorry.
Tyler, have you seen Alien, like, ever? And then when was the last time you've seen it, if you have?
Alien?
Mm-hmm. The first one.
I've seen Aliens.
Yeah.
I have Alien. Have I watched it? That's a good question. The answer is probably no.
Oh, wow. Okay.
But, you know, I really don't. Yeah.
Okay.
I own it. Isn't that good enough?
Owning it and not watching it might be worse, actually.
True.
So the last time I saw Alien was when I was about 14 years old, and I thought the movie was super slow, and I didn't really get much out of it. I was like, God, this is so boring. Like, what is going on here? And, you know, it was made in 1979, so it was a different style of filmmaking. And I watched it this week and was, like, kind of struck by how easily I can see my 14-year-old self being really bored in the beginning of this movie, because it gets off to an extraordinarily slow start. But once it gets going, it actually gets really, really good. So I would recommend busting that out of your DVD case and ripping the plastic off that thing and giving it a go, especially if you plan on seeing Prometheus. Not that Prometheus, because I've seen Prometheus. I wrote a review for it. You can read that at notjustnewmovies.com. I'm not going to talk a lot about that movie because it hasn't come out yet, but there's not a ton of connection to the Alien franchise. There's a little bit, but it really does work as kind of a standalone thing, so you don't have to, like, hunt down a copy of Alien before you see Prometheus. I was kind of worried that I might miss certain things, and there are some tiny nods here and there, but Prometheus works pretty well on its own. So
maybe it references, like, Alien Resurrection and not Alien.
That would be really ridiculous.
Like, Winona Ryder's just wandering around in Prometheus. Nobody ever notices it because they all think it's Alien referencing.
Yeah.
There's a lot of Sigourney Weaver with no pants on in Alien, right?
It's like the whole last, like, 30 minutes or something is that, and I kind of, you know, you recognize that as, like, this iconic series of scenes,
it's
maybe?
It's the famous pantslessness, I think.
Right, yeah.
Call it.
I'm not going to call it a scene, because I think it's more than one, but yeah, and I kind of forgot about that, and I was like, does this happen in Alien or Aliens? I don't remember. And by the way, for those of you who have not seen either, I think this might be like sacrilege to some people, but I believe I prefer Aliens to Alien just because it's so much more action-packed, and Ridley Scott does a really good job with the first Alien. I mean, there are moments of, like, terror in this movie, and some of the effects look a little dated now, as opposed to something like The Thing, John Carpenter's The Thing, which the effects are, like, still just as scary now as they were back then. I feel like Alien kind of lost a little bit with time, but it's still a good movie, and if you haven't seen it, I'd recommend checking it out. It's not, like, so terrifying that you're going to, like, have nightmares or anything, unless you're, like, super sensitive to that kind of stuff. So, I would just give kind of a hearty recommendation for Alien. Definitely go see Prometheus, because that movie's awesome. And then a slightly larger a recommendation for Aliens, which was directed by James Cameron, of all people. So,
And it stars Paul Reiser as well. So I think that might be why it's your favorite.
You're right. Everything with Paul Reiser in it is on my list of favorites.
Cinematic gold.
All right. So the, yeah, that's sadly that's all. Oh, actually, one more thing I wanted to just touch
on. Bring it up.
This isn't like a.
Touch
I'm not gonna go too much into this. Have you seen Sherlock yet? I think I've talked about this show.
Everybody's been talking about that, but my answer is no.
Okay, the first season is available on Netflix. Watch instantly. I would highly, highly recommend. And forgive me if I'm repeating myself. If I've talked about this in an earlier episode. Definitely check the show out. It's so good. Everybody listening, please go watch it. If you have Netflix, it's super easy to check out. There are 3 episodes in the first season. They're 90 minutes long each, but so it kind of feels like a mini movie. Really
super
awesome
movie.
Yeah, it's like it's Sherlock Holmes in the modern day, and the writing is fantastic. The direction is really great. And the acting is awesome. Benedict Cumberbatch, which of course everybody jokes about it being like the most British name of all time, is really fantastic in the show. And he's kind of blowing up now, getting cast in all kinds of stuff. He's going to be some sort of villain in the new Star Trek movie. And he was in War Horse, if you guys saw that one, the Spielberg movie. But in any case, Sherlock is really excellent. We just finished watching season 2, or series 2, as they refer to it in jolly old England, and it's great stuff. So there's always like the middle episode of each season kind of drops in quality for me a little bit, but the premiere and the finale are really great in both seasons so far, or series. So another big recommendation for Sherlock, which I believe airs on the BBC, and then I know it comes on PBS in the United States. Masterpiece Mystery, I believe, is what it's called on the DVR. So.
Oh yes, Masterpiece Mystery.
Yeah.
It's hosted
by the dude Alan Cumming, who played a Nightcrawler in X-Men 2. And he's just welcome to Masterpiece Mystery. He's got like this, I can't do his voice, but he's got like a pretty hardcore accent. So he's like, Sherlock, right here on PBS. So anyway, it's good stuff.
He never got to break out when X-Men 3 didn't feature Nightcrawler at all.
Yeah, freaking Ratner.
Don't they know that Mystique's his mom? Oops, spoiler.
Spoiler for a movie.
They're both blue, so it kind of made sense.
All right. Well, let's go ahead and jump on into our review of Hellraiser.
Hellraiser. Beyond any terror you have imagined. A nightmare.
No.
Unlike anything you have witnessed. Is born. Because within these walls, the unholy is unleashed. Hellraiser, a film by Clive Barker.
We'll tear your soul apart.
All right, so Hellraiser came out in 1987. This movie was written and directed by Clive Barker, one of the masters of horror, some might say.
Wait, really?
I think some would say that. Yeah, he's a pretty
Clive
famous...
Barker.
Yeah, Clive Barker. Let me look up
sounds
his.
Like, he sounds like a swashbuckler.
Let me look up his filmography
up
here.
Up against Errol Flynn in the New Adventures of Robin Hood.
Let's see.
Ivaka, haha.
He wrote the short story that Midnight Meat Train was based on. So that
the porn bin
qualifies him as a some sort of
the Midnight Meat Train porn version doesn't have to change its title.
I'm looking here. He produced Candyman, and
wait, did that have Clint Howard in it? That ice cream man or something.
The ice cream man, yeah.
He might have been in Candyman too. Maybe he just made a cameo. Or a candio.
Wow, I knew that was going to happen. Somehow I knew you were going to do that. Okay. Anyway, let's talk about Hellraiser. So, Tyler, you and I, we've had some kind of bad luck recently with...
Oh, really?
With horror movies that feature kind of iconic horror villains... And those characters not actually being too heavily involved in the first movie in that series. Yeah. I'm talking
fairly strange.
Friday the 13th, and how Jason like basically doesn't appear in that movie until like the last 10 seconds or something. So what did you think about Hellraiser? Were you going in anticipating some Pinhead action, or what?
Is that his name, Pinhead?
It is, yeah.
Okay, because I thought his name was Hellraiser, but I guess I kind of thought Pinhead, whatever his name is, was going to be like kind of the main antagonist, but he's more so like a greater threat, I guess, to the real antagonist in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Frank. And but like, if you take the idea that Hellraiser is not going to be heavily featured in the film, I mean, it's still an okay movie. I mean, it's not approaching great in any way, but it's kind of suspenseful. There's a little too much gore, but yeah, I think Hellraiser or Pinhead, whatever, or Powder, whatever, whatever people want to, you know, kind of get wrong about his character. Should have probably been featured more because he's on the freaking box.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess maybe like later they were like, oh, well, we should just feature this guy all the time because everyone's talking about guy with a pin in his faces.
Yeah, I mean, it's a horrifying image. And I remember as a kid walking through the like Blockbuster and just seeing the VHS cover for Hellraiser and being horrified at it. Like, this was like one of the scarier things that I could imagine.
That was pretty tame compared to the Jason Goes to Hell cover.
Yeah, that one also.
Snake going through the hockey mask.
Yeah, the snake freaks me out too as a kid.
I want to check out this movie so hard.
But
that's
yeah,
what I sounded six.
Well, yeah, but I mean, I was really like, and I guess that's the thing about Hellraiser for me is like, if I would have seen this at a young age, it would have destroyed me. Like, I would have been terrified.
Yeah, it's pretty scary.
Because, yeah, some of it gets really intense, and there's a lot of, like, almost Cronenberg-esque body horror stuff going on.
Thank you, because I put very fly-esque.
Yeah.
It's a Cronenberg, because it was, like, Videodrome.
Yeah, and
Videodrome.
And there's, yeah, like, the, you know, people getting hooked, and, like, their skin stretched in all directions. And
now that I have you.
what a terrible joke.
Yeah, the hooking, I do not enjoy hooking at all.
Yeah, me neither.
Not a big fan of piercings, needles, hooks, anything that penetrates my skin. You know, being cut, I don't like paper cuts.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like anything that makes me bleed.
Right.
So, yeah, I wouldn't be comfortable as a character in this movie because that was heavily featured.
Yeah. Well, speaking of
bleeding a lot.
Speaking of penetration, let's talk about the story a little bit.
Say penetration.
You did. I think you did.
Oh yes, my skin. Oh yeah, that. Okay.
Don't tear down my segue. So
now that I have you, penetration.
Julia, who's played by Claire Higgins, is the wife. Figure in this movie.
A super bitch.
Yes, and I think she deserves whatever comes to her, which I guess we can say because we always spoil everything
explode.
On this podcast.
Oh no, she didn't explode. Never mind.
Sorry. No, she got penetrated, but with a knife instead of Frank's junk, like she was begging for the entire movie. She was like such a deplorable character because she's married to Larry, who like is kind of a nerd, but is essentially a nice guy.
Really excited about boxing.
Yeah, he's just like, you know, he's kind of like your everyman husband, like lovable goofball, kind of like a maybe a less likable version of Craig T. Nelson from Poltergeist or something.
Aww, I love you, Craig.
And you know, there's no reason that Larry deserves the treatment that he gets from Julia, but she just like basically is all about Frank's junk because he like roughed her up in this like sex world that he inhabited before he went off to Thailand and bought a magical box and and like
I need to find pleasure elsewhere. To Thailand.
Pleasure and pain at the same time. It was like
that flashback was really bizarre because she was like, oh shit, I found these boxes of pictures and they just happened to be Frank. And she, like, flashes back to, like, their wedding. I'm going to assume it was not the wedding night, but the night before their wedding.
Yeah.
And he's like, hey, what's up? I'm Frank. and it's like raining outside, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, who? And he's like, Brother Frank. And she's like, okay, come on in and bone me. And like on the wedding dress,
yeah,
like preparing, like, yeah, like you said, deplorable, just no ethics, no morals.
Yeah.
Just like straight up, you know, I just want this now and I'll deal with the consequences later.
Yeah, and I mean, the whole movie, I think, is just like kind of condemning that notion of like, you know, and being impetuous and kind of taking what you want at that time. Like, everybody who does that in this movie gets, you know, this terrible death coming to them. And
except for Larry, who, nice guys finish last.
Yeah, exactly. Larry freaking gets, like, burned alive and skinned, and he deserves nothing. Like, he's such a cool... I don't know.
What is going on?
He just cares about his kid, who... And, man, Kirsty. Oof.
What, yeah, she's like a 1980s, what was her name, from Dollhouse.
Dollhouse? Like,
yeah, you know what I'm talking about.
Eliza Dushku?
Dushku, that's it, Dushku.
Nice.
Yeah, looked a little bit like her, maybe a little bit of, yeah, mostly Dushku.
A little bit of Ashley Judd, a little bit of Natalie Portman in there too, maybe, but...
Maybe.
Yeah, she was...
What's super, her name? Something Lawrence.
Super hot. Ashley Lawrence.
What's up, girl?
So,
30 years ago.
I don't even really know where to start with this.
Okay,
book. So
let's go through the plot. We started with Frank and his trip to Thailand to find the magical box.
Right.
What happens after that, then?
Okay, so we've also seemingly watched a lot of movies on this podcast where like a couple moves into a creaky old house.
Yes.
That seems to be like a running. Theme.
Can't go wrong there with that plot point.
I was wondering if this would make your list of top five movie houses if you had seen it before with that list and not just a movie.
No, see, that list was houses I wanted to move into.
Right. I
know. This one had a room that apparently no one had ever gone into because it's covered in rats and maggots and
yes.
dead people and stuff like that.
So that wouldn't make sense.
I can't imagine going through a house and being like, oh, I'm not going to walk into that room ever.
Yeah, and then, like, when they first walk in, okay, first of all, they walk in, and the house is, like, completely dilapidated. There's, like, mold and stuff all over the walls, and then they have people over for a dinner party a few scenes later, but they haven't cleaned the house yet. Like, there's still these disgusting pieces of just, like, blackness sticking all over the walls. It's like, dude, clean this up. Have a little self-respect before
yeah.
you have people come over. So, anyway... They move in, there's, like, yeah, the really weird crap everywhere. There's, like, the kitchen has, like, old pizza boxes and food everywhere that's been, you know, decomposing for years, and they don't ever show them cleaning that.
No.
I think
we assume it's been dirty the entire time. They just
yeah.
sleep around that stuff.
And then as they move in, Kirsty, the daughter, somehow knows the phone number for the house. Even though the dad isn't even aware that the house has a phone, let alone knows what
right.
the number is.
Sure.
He's like, what's that noise? Oh, it's a phone ringing. Who is this? Kirsty? Oh, hey, what's up? It's like, what is going on?
I can't believe Frank paid his phone bills from beyond the grave.
Yeah, exactly.
In so, Hellraiser world.
You know, he's talking to the daughter.
He's like spinning on the torture rack, and he's like, oh, man, I got to pay that phone bill.
Julia walks
in. Pinhead, can you send my check in? Okay, I'm done.
Pinhead, please, it's going to be 2 days late.
My uncle's kid might be trying to call him. No, my brother's kid.
What's her name? Julia wanders upstairs at this point and basically just, like, pants in the middle of the room while she's remembering bro sex with Frank. Yeah, I mean, we don't need to go through the entirety of the plot, but it's just
I think we kind of need to.
Okay, all right, you take it.
I just want to talk about the box.
Okay, let's talk about the box.
So the hell. I don't know where the term Hellraiser comes from because hell isn't really featured.
Frank was raised from hell, maybe.
Maybe. Okay. You know, Jason goes to hell. It's like, oh, well, hell wasn't featured in this movie either. He just goes to hell, literally. So he finds this, like, magic Rubik's Cube that's, like, gold.
Mm-hmm.
And you can, like, twist it around and, like, fool around with it. And it releases, like, these interdimensional travelers who like to torture people a lot.
Which are, they're called Cenobites, I believe.
Yeah, yeah, the four. There's like fat one, girl one, guy with chattering teeth, who I kept going, like, whenever I saw him, I'd just be like, ha-cha-cha-cha-cha. And then, of course, Pinhead. And then they had like a weird dog thing, too, that would run around through. Anyway, so if you move the box in a certain way, like, it takes you to different dimensions. And only a couple people fooled around with it. Like, Kirsty fooled around with it. And then Frank, of course, used it because that's how he got to Torture Zone.
Mm-hmm.
Level 4 of Torture Zone. And but you can, like, also get rid of them with the magic box, too.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the magical hobo who gets his hands on the box at one point.
Right. The rules of the cube were kind of unclear to me.
Yeah, it was kind of a... it was just more of, what's that term where, oh, the Deus Ex Machina?
Yeah.
Where it's there to explain things.
Right.
Yeah.
Or it's there to solve problems at the very end of the of the thing without
really explaining. They're going to kill Pinhead. Oh, let's just use the box again.
Yeah, and it was like, you know, at certain points it seemed as if she would, turn the cube a certain way, and then one of the Cenobites would disappear at the very end. But then she would have to do it every time.
Yeah.
Which doesn't make any sense. Like, why wouldn't she just do it once and all of them disappear at the same time?
I thought that too, but then I was like, well, maybe each one's got a different code that sends them back.
Oh. Okay. All right.
Because there was, I don't know, Hellraiser 2, one she didn't technically send back. He was the fat one that got caught under the house collapse.
That is true. I was wondering about that.
Like, he's just straight chilling under some wood.
Yeah, and then...
And they burnt everything, so... didn't they come across his body?
Yeah, and then you talked also about the creepy homeless guy that was following Kirsty around for the entire movie and just, like, staring at her, like, I don't know why, because...
General hobo activity, though. Like,
yeah.
He didn't doubt that he wasn't a hobo.
Right.
Like, eating crickets in the pet store, like, that's pretty normal.
Yeah, I thought he was just a weird hobo guy. And then it turns out that he's actually a flying dragon skeleton. So
he's a skeleton dragon from Torture Zone.
We should have seen that coming, I guess. I do love that that's how the movie ends. It's like creepy guy just like catches himself on fire, turns into a dragon skeleton, and flies away. And Kirsty and Steve, her annoying boyfriend who wears like awesome shirts, are just like standing there left to watch this dragon fly away into the night.
But then it all took place in the box, which exists inside another world. Brom.
Is that what it implied there?
That's the idea I got.
That's kind of amazing. I didn't really think about that. I just thought it was like a stupid transition, because you're right. Like, it zooms out from that shot I just mentioned into a shot of the side of the box sitting in Thailand again, and the Asian guy who sells it to Frank at the beginning asks somebody else like what their pleasure is, and that's
it was always yours. Take it. It reminded me of the end of The Quest, where we don't really know kind of how the movie ends, like where it takes place in this big scheme of things.
Yeah, and if these characters are fictional, or if they're if this is a flashback of some sort, or like what exactly the structure is. Yeah, I guess
was that Van Damme sitting at the table about to buy the box?
Man, we really need to watch The Quest for this podcast at some point.
Okay, now I also want to talk about Frank, who just happens to be just the complete, like, 100% lowlife. Like, he has no redeeming qualities at all. He only thinks negative things. He only has bad goals in mind. He just wants to freaking, I don't know, rock his jollies off to whatever pleases him. Like, whether it be, like, his brother's fiancés or like, torture wrecks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that spin with hooks and things.
Yep.
Not fun.
He is into that stuff.
Yeah, he's into all kinds of stuff. And so Frank, I guess, when he entered Torture Zone, I guess he was also buried in the house.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how he came back to life, because he was in the floorboards.
Right.
Maybe. Am I getting that right?
I think so, yeah. I think it was also unclear, because the opening of the movie, like, Frank gets this box, and then he goes, you know, in the house and, like, kind of like twists it or something in this weird like demonic circle, and then all of a sudden Pinhead just like slowly walks in and he twists the box.
What's up? I'm Pinhead.
And then he vanishes and Frank disappears, but like there's like a piece of his heart or something that's left under the floorboards, but why? I don't know. It also kind of was weird that when Kirstie was captured later in the movie by Pinhead and the rest of the Cenobites, I thought it was funny that she was like, "Wait, you guys know who Frank is, right?" And they're like, "Yeah, we tortured him, so what?" And then she's like, but he got away." And they're like, "No, that's not true. Nobody ever gets away from us." And she's like, but he did. I know where
they're
he
like
is.
They're like the jocks of like a high school. Like, where's Frank? I gotta get that kid.
Yeah, let's hear it from his own voice. Let's see.
He's hiding out in the bathroom. Get him.
So that
starts the main drive of the movie. It's like Frank, like, okay, there are a couple things that lead up to this point. Who was boning who? Oh, okay. She was having a flashback about boning Frank.
Mm-hmm.
Larry's trying to move a mattress upstairs.
Yes.
And so, like, they're gyrating in the flashback, and he's gyrating on the mattress.
Yep.
He looks like he's basically humping a mattress. And then he cuts his hand with a nail on the wall. And I wrote in my notes, I didn't know tetanus was an STD. And so he comes up to the room that nobody ever goes into, and what's her name again?
Julia.
Super bitch is in there, and like some of Larry's blood drops onto the floor and is like soaked in, and then Frank starts recomposing, but he can only recompose so much. Like he becomes like the fly, like after the machine. I don't know. I can't remember the fly. And so this is kind of like a grotesque. That was kind of a scary part where Super Bitch walked back in, and Frank was just like he had to drag himself across the floor.
Yeah.
To be like, "Heal me."
Yeah, and he somehow has like I don't know, wicked speed where he can crawl faster than Julia can run and open the door, and he also has the strength to slam the door shut when she's trying to open it, and he's just like, "Don't look at me."
Yeah.
I guess the practical effects were pretty effective.
Yeah, it was kind of like in The Mummy where Imhotep's trying to come back, and every stage he gets a little more back until he's fully human again.
Right.
And so, like, the main thrust in the movie is Super Bitch has to, like, seduce these guys into the house while Larry's at work, and like make it look like they're about to bang, and then they go to this really weird obscure room, and every single time the guy's like, "Oh, this is interesting." It's like, dude, are there any normal people in this town? Like, are you gonna bang this lady on like freaking rat infested dry board?
Yeah, she's just like, "I prefer the floor," and they're like, "Yeah, I'm down. I'm whipping my pants off."
And so she beats them with a hammer every single time.
Yeah.
In the back of the head. And then Frank, like, you know, sucks up their brains or something.
Mm-hmm.
And then he gets stronger. And, of course, the last person is Larry.
See, that is also not, like, super clear to me how Frank kind of absorbs people into himself. Because at the very end, if you remember, when he accidentally he's trying to stab Kirstie, and he stabs Julia in the stomach on the stairs.
Who's Julia?
The super bitch.
Oh, super bitch.
He's like choking her, and she's like, "No, not me." And he's like, "Nothing personal, babe." And he like sucks the life out of her. But he doesn't look any different at that point from when he did before. He still has like the gash marks in his face and stuff. So it's not like an instantaneous thing where he kind of sucks the life from them and it becomes part of him, or it is, and they just didn't do it for that last time for some reason. I don't know.
Right.
It was, again, another inconsistency in the kind of the mythos of Hellraiser.
Sure. And everything leads up into that kind of epic stand down where Super Bitch is dead, Larry's dead, Frank is almost complete, and Kirstie kind of tricks him back into the room, which apparently is the only place in the world where stuff can happen.
Yeah.
So, like, I guess Pinhead and his friends are hanging out in the room again, and they're like, oh, hey, what's up? Is this Frank? Because they don't recognize, I guess they can't read souls or something, because they see Larry.
Yeah.
Actually Frank, and they're like, this isn't Frank. This is Larry.
Yeah.
And she's like, no, he killed Larry. This is actually Frank. And they're like, oh, okay, hook him up. And she thought, like, Kirstie thought, see, this whole movie is stupid, really, now that we've talked about it. Like, the dynamics of the film are kind of just weird.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it came together fairly well. And so she goes, all right, yeah, you were going to let me go, right? And they're like, no, that's a lie. We're going to mess with you up.
Because he said, I was cracking up when Kirstie was trying to make this deal with Pinhead before they go back to the house. And
right.
she's like, but maybe... Or no, she says something like, I can tell you where Frank is, I can lead you to him or something, and then you can take him instead of me. And then Pinhead's like, maybe. Maybe.
I would need a clearer answer before I start doing anything for Pinhead.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, we'll think about it.
And you also mentioned the fact that they only seem to operate in this room. I love the concept of them just like appearing at a Starbucks or something while Kirstie is out like studying with her friends, right. Or like in the middle of, you know, at the pet shop, they just like show up in a cage or something.
Yeah, like they can only torture in that room, but everywhere else they're just kind of normal. They just look like they're all messed up.
Yeah, and then they're like, hey, why don't you guys come back to this crazy old house with me? I got something cool to show you up here. It's just a little room, nothing big.
Trying to convince people from Starbucks to go with them. Oh yeah, there's this pretty awesome party happening down at the old house there on 3rd Street.
And he'll just be like, yeah, there's this chick named Julia. She'll bang you. And then, like, everyone would go because apparently she's, like...
Totally going to get hammered at this place. Am I right? And he, like, nudges Chattering Teeth Guy.
Boom, botch.
And he chatters his teeth like he's laughing.
Get hammered.
I have a couple of notes if you want me to go through them right now.
Please, yes. Okay.
I already said my tetanus STD joke.
Mm-hmm.
Classic. What motorizes those spinning hook poles in that room, I wonder? Like, no one notices any, like, motors on the first floor that keep those hook poles spinning.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
For torture, of course. When douchebag boyfriend is, like, sitting at the table during the party trying to win over Kirstie, I wrote the phrase, I don't think the eating your own cigarette trick is the panty dropper he thinks it is.
I don't know, man. It seemed to really work on Kirstie.
Yeah, I guess.
I'll give him that.
Too bad he didn't get to go to the rat room to make love. Greatest pickup line ever, you have to heal me. no question. Another question I asked, do you think Meatloaf would have a problem with what the super bitch was doing? Because Meatloaf does claim he would do anything for love.
Right. But he... Is killing someone with a hammer that he refers to that he will not do in that song?
Exactly. An answer only left to time.
and only Meatloaf can give. You know how ridiculous it would be if in an interview Meatloaf was like, yeah, the one thing that I wouldn't do for love is kill somebody with a hammer like in Hellraiser. That's what inspired that song, and I just wouldn't do it. He was too gross.
We have Meatloaf on as a guest for this podcast, and we refuse to recognize him until this very point where we go, so Meatloaf, would you do this for love?
He's just been sitting in silence.
Yes or no? No, I won't do that. And he's like, okay, thanks, thanks to our guest Meatloaf.
Thanks, Meatloaf.
Oh, that would have been a good voicemail for Meatloaf to leave.
Yep.
He just sings a couple of bars, and then he goes, but a woman... kill people with a hammer and give them up to Pinhead.
But seriously, Julia is so messed up because, like, half recomposed Frank, she's like sucking on his fingers and stuff, and it's like, good God, woman! Like, how bad do you need it from this guy? This is embarrassing. Like,
I mean, I at least she waited until most of his muscles were back intact. But that still didn't keep like the blood from out, because he was bleeding. Even when he put on clothes, he was still bleeding everywhere.
Right.
And he, like, at one point, like, his white shirt was, like, red. And I was like, could you Did you like put on an undershirt or something, like some type of like like saran wrap?
Really unsanitary.
Yeah, Frank has been around the world in 80 days and he's got everything from in his bloodstream.
Yeah, man. Who knows?
Been to Thailand, Ben.
why doesn't Kirstie notice that when Frank has taken over Larry's body, when she thinks she's talking to her dad, but she's actually talking to Frank,
correct,
that his ears are all grotesque and he's like bleeding ooze and he's got like sticky goo all over him?
Yeah, he's pretty busted up.
Why is that not an immediate red flag for Kirstie? I don't understand. Like, she seems relatively intelligent for most of the movie, and then she gets to that point, and she's like, oh no, but your brother Frank is trying to kill you, and then, like, it's pretty clear what's going on. If she'd ever seen the movie before, she would know what was happening. But.
Right. This is kind of, I mean, I've been doing this for, like, an hour or so. Something's got to be falling into place at this point. Usually it's not that easy, but yeah, that was pretty stupid, because even the wife was like, because I think she'd figured out that the wife was handing up victims for Frank.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Wife was there, and she's like, oh, hey, what's going on?
Yeah.
And Larry was just like, everything's fine, don't worry.
Yeah.
It's not like we almost lost our lives.
Right.
Plus, the scene from the hospital was kind of, should have really had her on her toes. I was kind of, because that was the scene immediately afterwards, so... After you've seen, like, an interdimensional monster run at you, I wouldn't take anything lightly. Like, I wouldn't believe anything anyone said.
Yeah. That looked like a scene out of Beetlejuice, by the way. I don't know if you...
Oh, yeah. That reminded me of Phantasm, but...
Okay.
Beetlejuice a little bit, too, yeah, because they open the door and there's, like, monsters out there.
Mm-hmm. Dumbest line in the entire movie for me, Jesus wept. Where did that come from?
I don't know.
When he's being, like, pulled apart, like, what does that have to do with anything? There are no real religious references in this movie. And then he just...
Go Timberwolves!
The shortest Bible verse in the Bible, and then you get... I mean, he might as well have said, go Timberwolves.
Yeah, like, I like the idea of, like, playing that scene. Like, this could be, like, the new video meme, where it's like this scene, but then you just put something else in for Jesus wept, like any, literally anything else.
I had a Pop-Tart for breakfast.
Rosebud. Wait, that doesn't make sense.
Yeah, man.
So, yeah, I don't know what freaking, who was the guy that wrote this?
Clive Barker.
Yeah, Clive Barker, I don't know what kind of agenda he had at that. He's like, just wait until he's about to be ripped apart by Pinhead and his friends. He's really going to slam the point home. Like, wait, are you Jesus? Who's Jesus in this scenario?
Yeah.
Was Jesus pulled apart? No. Come on, history lessons.
Yeah. I don't know what they were doing. Yeah, I think we can pretty safely say that Clive Barker, after seeing this movie, based on just this movie anyway, is not necessarily the horror master that... some people might refer to him as. I don't know.
There's a lot of gore. It wasn't much. I mean, there was suspense, but there wasn't much horror.
Yeah, and it was just kind of...
Unless you feel like penetrating your skin is horrific, which I kind of do.
You know, it's more like a domestic movie than, you know, like about these relationships with these people, and as opposed to, like, Pinhead coming along and doing anything awesome or scary or anything like that. It's just like, yeah, like you said, he's kind of this higher power villain where he just kind of controls things from afar. He's like this very disconnected guy, and
yeah,
I mean, from the build up of what this movie would be from when I was a kid and all this stuff, I was expecting it to be, I didn't really know what Pinhead's power was per se, or what he would be able to do, or how, if he like shot the nails out of his head and killed people or something. I don't know,
but a blowfish.
Yeah, but like, I think, like, if the movie was something more like that, I might have liked it a little bit more. As it is right now, I didn't really care for this movie that much. It just seemed like all the characters were terrible, really, except for Larry, who gets it, you know, as we said, in the end, even despite doing nothing wrong. And Kirstie was okay, but even she showed signs of, you know, just kind of stereotypical horror movie incompetence. So there wasn't really much for me to get behind in this movie. Like, a lot of times the main characters, like the human characters in these movies, are kind of stupid on purpose, or people that you don't want to associate with, so you almost pull for the villain. You kind of want Jason to kill these people, or Michael Myers, or any of these other Freddy Krueger, any of these other big horror movie icons. You want them to kill them because they do all these things that basically deserve death, and you kind of identify more with the villain, and that kind of shapes your whole psyche, and that's like a lot of what the horror genre explores, I think, general sense. Is like, why do we want these people to die? Why, you know, what does it say about us as a culture that we're kind of rooting for the bad guys to kill these people? But in a movie like this, it's like Hellraiser, Pinhead wasn't even really in it that much for me to be able to root for him. He was just kind of this like outside source. So,
and he really didn't have any superpowers either.
Yeah, he just
kind of shows up and he's like, "Can I hook you?"
He could conjure chains with hooks on them. That's his superpower.
Right. That's kind of it's kind of lame. And plus, you like voluntarily enter into the contract too.
Yeah,
not like he's going around like forcing people to get hooked to these poles. He's
right.
Like, hey, what's up, Frank? Oh, you want to get tortured? Okay, we can do that for you.
Yeah, it's just giving people what they ask for, basically.
Right.
So,
just don't touch the box.
Not really anything too inherently scary about that. It's just people being stupid and getting what they deserve.
Don't buy shit from Thailand and then mess with it. Lesson learned.
Yeah. I also liked how Kirstie thought that she could just burn the box at the end. It's like, come on, you've seen interdimensional beings. You think fire is really gonna be the thing that kind of like puts this all to rest? It's like my girlfriend said something about how like, oh, this is like Jumanji or The Mask or something. It's like that's not gonna just go away. You can't just take that, you know.
And then she, like, my first thought is, even I would like put it on a ship going away from the country.
Mm-hmm.
She like wants to burn it like right on the beach of where they live. So there's a good chance it's going to pop up again somewhere in their lives. Cause that's always when you return to Crystal Lake, like Jason's always going to be there. So stop going back to Crystal Lake.
Yeah. Put that thing in a UPS package and mail it to Saddam Hussein or something. In 1987.
Retroactively. Yeah. The Saddam Hussein from the 80s. Not today, because of course he's dead.
Right.
Although still accepting mail.
And still paying his phone bills.
Exactly. You can ring any of Saddam's old castles, and you will definitely get a connection. Hey, is Frank there? No, he's in terror. He's in terror world.
I think that pretty much wraps up.
Yeah.
I don't think we could do it.
That's the whole movie. Yeah, that's it.
Just other than that. So.
Nothing really else to discuss.
I don't know, what do you think, like, despite the fact that Pinhead isn't necessarily in the movie as much as we would have liked, and do you think people should still check this out, like, if they're looking for, a kind of decent horror effort, or do you think their time would be better spent elsewhere?
This goes into, like, my Cronenberg category of, like, Videodrome and The Fly. Like, they're like, it's like that, kind of.
Yeah.
If you want, like, a horror movie that I like, you're going to go Friday the 13th or Halloween. Yeah.
It's weird how, like, all of those movies that you just said, except for Halloween, which I think came out in, like, 77 or 78 or something, came out in the 80s, and yet they still have, like, the feel of them is so different between, like, the Friday the 13th franchise and something like Videodrome and The Fly and Hellraiser, even. Like, yeah, like, you know, we've kind of grouped Hellraiser in with the Cronenberg category, but even though these movies were all made in the 80s, there's like this remarkably different kind of vibe to them
than from the horror movies of today.
Well, yeah, from today and even from each other, you know, like the Cronenberg set is very different from the Friday the 13th set, even though they were all made around the same time. So it's just interesting. A lot of times we like look back on a decade or something and kind of simplify it to a degree and say, like, oh, yeah, all the movies from the 90s featured, you know, huge explosions or, like, you know, whatever. Like, insert stereotype here for – or, like, sweeping generalization here for what we think. But, it's I guess it's a good example of a little bit more of the diversity within a decade as far as scarier movies or body horror movies or whatever you want to call them. So.
Body horror, that's it. Like Saw?
Yeah, you know, like
the torture. Saw's not that scary.
Torture porn, I guess, is what they refer to those as. But yeah, anyway.
We saw the fifth one in theaters, right?
I believe so, yeah.
We watched 1 through 4 and then we watched 5 because I haven't seen 6 or 7.
Yeah, I love Saw. The one that... that reveals that it was actually taking place at the same time as one of the previous ones. Like, that's the big reveal at the end. And I was like, oh, man, that's actually really cool. But, yeah, the Saw franchise never really did much for me. So
no, definitely not.
I do love your insistence on hoping for, what is it, Saw 8, Jigsaw?
Yeah. Ace. Oh, that's a Ben Tyler collaboration.
Yeah.
In space, only Jigsaw can hear you scream for the 8th time.
I also
like Jigsaw.
That idea that you have to scream 8 times and then Jigsaw hears you. Like, you could scream 7 times really loud, but
yeah.
He's
chilling at the Starbucks with Pinhead waiting for that 8th scream.
Oh,
gotta get going, Pinhead.
Somebody called me.
Time to play a game.
All right. So, Tyler, you want to rev up the old Apple II? Is that thing, you got it back from the shop, right?
Yeah, it's back from the spa. It's, you know, the computer spa, I guess.
Okay.
Computers, I guess, just sit in a room and collect dust.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's June.
Okay.
Welcome new month. So no more Mystery Movie May, or whatever we were calling that.
Yep.
Basically just calling it lazy, I think.
Yep.
But next week.
Efforts on our part.
Half-assed efforts, yeah. That's our idea of sweeps, is just not doing any work. So next week, let's see what the Apple II has for us.
All right.
All right, so next week we're going to watch another, not a horror, but it's a, I guess, what do you call it, a dark comedy?
I think so.
Heathers, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, Heathers.
Heathers.
Multiple. Yeah,
1988. You mentioned Winona Ryder earlier.
She's
on
in it.
In this
podcast, yeah. She might stop by, actually. Wait, no, I got that wrong. I don't think there are vampires in this. I thought there were, but I don't think there are.
I don't know. I've never seen it, but I've heard... heard it's decent, so we'll
see. People were kind of like, you've never seen Heathers? And I was like, no, that's why I'm talking about it. And I can't remember what it was on Twitter somewhere.
Okay.
They're like, you've never seen Heathers? That's a good movie. And I was like, yeah, we're probably watching Hellraiser this week anyway.
Oh, man. Heathers, Hellraiser, whatever.
Starts with an H.
Cool. All right. Well, yeah, if you guys have seen Heathers or you want to rewatch it or whatever, it's on Netflix Instant. You can shoot us an email. Let us know what you think about it. Do that at notjustnewmovies@gmail.com. You can call and leave us a voicemail at 904-469-6566. You can subscribe for free to this podcast in iTunes. Please do. Leave us a review. You can search for GeekTyrant-NJNM and find us there with our new feed. Check us out on Facebook, facebook.com/NotJustNewMovies, and on Twitter at twitter.com/NJNMPodcast. We do have one new follower this week, and that is at BravesMLB67, a man of my own heart, the Atlanta Braves fan, or an
after Atlanta. Your own heart.
Yeah.
He's not of your own heart.
Right, I guess.
That would be Frank Larry territory right there.
Right, yeah, true. Good Twitter handle. Thanks for the follow. So we got.
I thought you were a Pirates fan.
I do like the Pirates as well, but the Braves are kind of
suck so hard.
My first love. So let's read some of the comments and stuff that we got here from previous episodes and random reviews and one actual email that we got that I want to read and kind of address here in a minute, but. First one is from Ralph Macho, R-A-L-F Macho. Ooh. This was left on our episode 90, the Karate Kid episode that we did with Vince Mancini last time. It was a really good episode. People should listen to that if you haven't heard it yet. I was talking about the Hero Complex Film Festival, and somebody, Ralph Macho, said, "Super equals Ellen Page slash fiction turned up to 11, boy." So, yeah, Super being James Gunn's movie I talked about a little bit. Really good movie.
Was that comment really worth reading?
I think so, yeah. Ellen Page, it's worth giving her giving her some props for her performance in Super.
I do enjoy her.
Check that out. Let's see. I guess the only other one that probably warrants reading is from Joseph, and this is something that I want to address. I'm going to read this, kind of a longer one, so bear with me. Here we go. NJNM crew, I was extremely disappointed by your half-hearted and kind of brush-off review of Akira. Seems like you didn't really bother to do any research on the film before talking about it. Akira was really a landmark film in Japan and is really regarded as one that influenced much of the art in the anime world that followed its release, with many illustrators in the manga industry citing the film as an important influence. The film led the way for the growth of popularity of anime outside of Japan and is considered a forerunner of the second wave of anime fandom that began in the early 1990s and has gained a massive cult following since then. I just think it deserved a great deal more credit than, quote, a pretty weird movie that I'd only really recommend to diehard anime fans, end quote. And then he says, I apologize.
Actually, a pretty good review.
He says, I apologize for paraphrasing your words, but I think I got the general wording. He continues on saying, I have a great deal of respect for this movie and the impact it had on popular culture, and I was just generally insulted by your lazy review. I just expected more out of someone who I consider to have a lot of respect for the art of film. Sincerely, Joseph. So, first of all, this dude is totally right, by the way. He's calling me on my crap, and I apologize. I watched Akira and talked about that. I don't even remember what episode it was. 89, 90, whatever. And see, again, me being lazy and not doing any research.
Before. We don't do that around here.
But no, what happened was we recorded like days and days late, like actually almost an entire week late for that episode. And I had watched Akira like a full week before, and it had been a long time since I'd seen it. And I didn't take any notes, which I should have, because that movie is very complex and it gets really kind of crazy at the end, and there's a lot of stuff in there that I didn't really comprehend watching it the first time, and I think I'm gonna need a couple more viewings of it to really grasp all the little kind of minutia and stuff in this movie, because there's a lot going on. It's actually a pretty good movie. It is really weird. I'm not gonna like take that back, and I do think it's a pretty weird movie that I'd only really recommend to diehard anime fans. Because a lot of people, sadly, in today's whatever pop culture landscape, aren't necessarily willing to go outside of the norm and watch an anime movie. Like, you can see Miyazaki films and stuff like that as movies that don't really do that well outside of like the movie blog nerd community and like, you know, cinephiles and people who are like really, really into movies, because American audiences just generally don't really kind of get into that stuff. So I think for people who listen to this podcast and have, you know, we don't really talk about anime too much on this podcast because Tyler and I aren't like really well versed in that. And I think my kind of recommendation for Akira was just my way of saying like, hey, this isn't really my thing, but yeah, check it out if you're into kind of weird, bizarre stuff. Like, I'm just trying to warn people, this isn't like a movie that we would normally recommend for. It isn't like similar to movies that we have recommended in the past. So I do appreciate Joseph calling me out on that, because it was kind of lazy, and I wish I would have been able to record that episode immediately after seeing the movie, because I feel like I could have spoken about it with a little bit more clarity. But and I almost like didn't talk about it at all. Like A Clockwork Orange. I saw that for the first time when I was talking about the Hero Complex Film Festival, and I didn't write anything about it really, and I haven't really spoken about it because there's so much going on in that movie. I just haven't really comprehended it. It's the same type of thing.
Just that scene where they hold his eyes open during the rape video. That's all I remember from it.
Oh right, yeah. There's man, that movie.
And he wears like one eyelash, and then he drinks milk, and I'm like, this is stupid.
So talk about reductive, dismissive reviews. There we go.
There you go, right there. Guilty.
But no, in all seriousness, thank you for listening, Joseph, and thanks for calling me out on that. And I'll try to be better about that next time, and at least maybe take some notes on the media consumed movies that that deserve a little bit more than just kind of an offhanded recommendation. So yeah, that's pretty much it for all the feedback, listener feedback and stuff for this week. So Tyler,
you got another comment, I think.
Okay. I wasn't going to read this, but it's all right. It's kind of funny. I wrote a review for Prometheus, as I mentioned. You guys can find that at notjustnewmovies.com. Ted from Herndon County left a message here and said, "Man, is it Charlize Theron June or what here at Not Just New Movies? Ben P., you see Reindeer Games? I think that should be your next topic because that movie rocks and things get workaholics weird. Dig it."
Yes.
P.S., which doesn't make any sense. Prometheus
looks... Postscript.
Because there was no postscript, so...
You skipped right to postscript?
Right, yeah. Prometheus looks awful, but this comes from the guy who thought Snow White was being portrayed by Theron and didn't know what the hell was going on. Soup to nuts, Ted from Herndon County, Ventricle of America. So thank you for that.
Ventricle of America.
He's talking about Snow White and the Huntsman, which came out this past weekend.
But it was a comment on Prometheus.
Right, right. So there's a lot of Charlize Theron crossover there.
That's what was funny.
Okay. So so Tyler, let's finish up the character name game for this week.
Okay.
Wrap this
okay.
sucker up. So the name was Stella Bridger.
Stella Bridger.
Any idea? What
is that a Kristen Stewart character?
It is not a Kristen Stewart character.
Is it a Charlize Theron character?
It is, yes.
Okay, all right. Stella Bridger. Was she in one of those movies, like Get Shorty? Was she in those? Was that the movie?
I don't think so. That's not what I'm going for here.
Okay, Charlize Theron.
Stella Bridger.
Can you give me a hint?
The hint is we've talked about this movie on this podcast before.
Oh, okay, all right.
In a real review, not just like an offhanded mention of it.
Okay, all right, an official review on this podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Charlize Theron.
Stella Bridger.
Do not remember anything.
She wears
about
a
that episode
at one point in this movie with the name Becky on it.
Becky.
And
give me a director.
F. Gary Gray.
Okay, I remember that name because I was like, F. Gary Ross Gray.
Right.
I thought was a terrible joke.
Can
you give me a year?
2003. And this is a big ensemble cast.
All right.
Jason Statham is in this movie.
Yes. Is it the Italian Job, not with Michael Caine?
Yes, you're correct.
You said ensemble cast. That's what locked it in.
Indeed. So Stella Bridger was Charlize Theron's character in The Italian Job. She also plays Ravenna, the evil queen, in Snow White and the Huntsman, which was out in theaters this past weekend.
Wait, I thought her name was Maleficent.
No, that is an upcoming movie with Angelina Jolie playing Maleficent.
Okay.
That's going to be out in 2014.
Now, wait. When's Captain Hook make an appearance?
What? When?
Is Dopey in this movie?
I think you're just listing random Disney
Ursula.
At this point.
Ursula the Sea Witch.
No.
Any correlation?
I don't know, but it wouldn't surprise me if Disney put into production some sort of like alternate take on Ursula the Sea Witch. That seems
She has like an affair with Triton or whatever his name is, the king. That's why things are so tense between them.
Oh, wow.
Mermaid's actually, Ariel's actually her daughter.
Oh, wow. Dude, I'm serious that sounds like something that would actually happen.
Yeah.
I think you've got something there.
It always like that. Like on Once Upon a Time, like the evil queen is like the stepmom of Snow White, and that's why she hates her so much.
Because
all they ever talk about was her nice mom, and then she comes in, and she's like, ugh, so sick of hearing about this lady's mom. Gotta kill some bitches.
There we go. Once Upon a Time.
That's great. I think I actually missed an episode because I have the season finale. Mm-hmm. On my DVR, and I started it, and I was like, wait a second, stuff happened that I don't remember. And so I have to go back and find the episode I missed.
Okay. All right.
But yeah, pretty good. Another TV show that wrapped up fairly nicely was the Green Lantern series on cartoon series.
Oh, okay.
Fairly nice. Pretty good.
Okay. Speaking of Green Lantern, real quick before we wrap this up, did you hear that Alan Scott is now gay?
I did hear that, and I think something on the Sentinel is going to pop up about that sooner rather than later.
All right, well, speaking
one
of
those quick interviews, I think.
Yeah, speaking of the Sentinel, why don't we tell people where they can find more of our work on the internet this week. Tyler, go ahead.
SolarSentinel.blogspot.com is where you can find pretty much a waste of time, basically, over there. I also, from time to time, make a comment on the NJNM podcast Twitter handle.
Yep.
And that's it.
Okay, cool. You guys can find me on Twitter as well, twitter.com/BenPears. You can find me writing every day at geektyrant.com, firstshowing.net, filmonic.com, and notjustnewmovies.com, which is the namesake for this podcast. You can hear me on the Geek Tyrant Weekly podcast. It's not really weekly anymore, and we haven't done one in like
not
2 or 3
existing.
Months. So, yeah.
Geek Tyrant existly?
Maybe we'll work on changing the name there.
Yeah.
So music for this episode will come courtesy of the Hellraiser soundtrack, if I can find it. If not, maybe something...
Meatloaf.
Like, yeah, Meatloaf or like Highway to Hell or something with hell involved.
I'll do anything for love.
I've got to end with that.
But
so.
I won't do that.
Enjoy Meatloaf as we play you out. We are going to be watching Heathers next week, so check that out. Leave us an email or voicemail. Let us know what you think about it. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you guys next week.
Won't do that.
So long.